and then went dim when assassins.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is now 9:01. Up next is the Radio Activists after these short messages.
Homeless people. They're some of the most vulnerable and misunderstood folks in our communities. Season 3 of Local Folks Podcast, Helping the Homeless, is dedicated to telling the story of how a group of local people is working to provide needed services to folks who are experiencing homelessness. Episode 1 introduces the Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center and the people at the center who give and receive help and support. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
KBOO Community Radio is having our annual book and record sale on November 23, 2019 to raise funds with support from the Willamette Week Give Guide. The sale will be located at Lagunitas Portland Community Room at 237 Northeast Broadway from 12 p.m. until 9 p.m. From classic books to coffee table books to cookbooks, treasures will be waiting for your discovery and just in time for the holidays. Enjoy community music, activities, and a live broadcast from KBOO at the event. Proceeds from the sales will support the station's operations. Right now, KBOO is accepting used books and records in good condition. Now through Friday, November 15th, listeners, members, and supporters can drop off donations during business hours at the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. After hours, appointments can be made available. For more information, please call 503-231-8032 or go online to kboo.fm.
Good morning. This is KBOO Portland, and I am Suzanne LeGrand. Today on the Radio Activists, I'm talking with Rona Feldman, Bonnie Berg, and Ruthie Mantico-Wald, who are all members of Positive Charge PDX. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So to start out, what is Positive Charge PDX?
We're a volunteer group that was begun in 2016 at the end of the year, and we decided we wanted to make a positive impact in our community by really focusing on positive things. And so we have been through three major focuses, making that impact through doing good deeds and sharing good news on our website and our Facebook page, which is Positive Charge PDX, and then also by having building community through events that we have.
Could you talk a little bit about some of the ways that you have created more positivity in the world, which is part of your mission?
Yes, we'd be happy to, because in our activities, we always try to focus on doing something for others, and we find that that's when we all get a positive charge. So, for example, one of the activities that we just participated in was pulling together backpacks for kids who are waiting with their families at the border. And we just all found that the support that we got through this event was just beyond what we could have imagined, giving all of us a positive charge while we were giving away all of these really wonderful gifts that people were giving to us.
Wow.
May I speak to that for a moment?
Sure.
This is one of the projects that's become most incredibly dear to my heart and didn't see it coming, and it was like a tsunami. Rona, I think, was the instigator of this. We were sitting around talking about what we wanted to work on. It wasn't you? And I thought it was you that said, can we do anything for the migrants?
Oh, maybe I did.
You did. And we all said, yes. And then Ruthie said, I know someone who's doing a thing called Little Mercy. She's collecting backpacks for the migrant children on the Mexican side. And we were on it. And I think we started in the middle of July, assuming that by the end of September, we'd have some backpacks. By September 15th, we had over 400 backpacks filled with all these things for children who have, according to Lulu, who is the social worker in Mexico, nothing, nada. So this was amazing. And I still have a garage filled from floor to ceiling, as do I think half of our group, with more things to bring down. And now I'd like to make a plug. We are desperate for transportation to get the rest of these goods down to San Diego. So if anybody would like to help with transportation, please contact me. Is it okay if I do this?
Sure.
Bonnie Berg, Bonnie Berg, 63 at Gmail. Thank you.
It sounds like this is an entirely volunteer-run organization. Is that right?
Absolutely.
So a lot of people, I know, are overwhelmed with the state of the world right now and all of the chaos. And asking people to do more or give of their very little free time seems overwhelming to many people, but that is not how you're talking about
no.
it. How do you find the time to do this kind of work, and what does it give you?
If I can speak to that, I would say that it doesn't take a lot of time to, you know, spend a few hours maybe on a Sunday or whatever fits into your schedule to help in any number of ways, whether it's baking cookies for people who work on Christmas Day or making lap pads for people who've been through sexual trafficking. Just spend a few hours to do something that gives you so much back. It makes you want to do more. With mm-hmm. the little time you have, it just sparks a feeling inside you that giving back really is also giving to yourself and giving to other people around you. Mm. It's been pretty amazing.
I might add to that too and say that we have been just so pleasantly surprised that whenever we seem to need a little, you know, someone shows up. And there's this sense of abundance in the world. And as Rona said, it's not that you have to do everything. And it's that old adage, many hands make light work. And so we all support each other. And others show up to fill in any gap that we find that we might need. It's just been somewhat serendipitous the way it's all worked out.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to make it clear, too, we are open to anybody and everybody who would like to help out. It's amazing. All welcome.
I want to change the operant word. It's not work.
Yes.
It's how do you have time in your life to play? Well, hopefully all of us make some time. That's what this is. It's just extended play. The most wonderful advances that I think we've found with the brain is understanding that kindness, compassion, abundance, love, all of these words are all connected to neurochemistry. And when you experience that, you actually get this lovely warm bath of hormones that literally are like a bath that just open up the channels of feeling good. And the thing about the acts of kindness is that not only the recipients, but the givers get it. And that, I think, is why we're all sitting here with these silly smiles on our face, nodding at each other, because it's been as close to, I feel like I'm selling an object. For 1995, you too can experience the miracle of feeling good by doing good.
Actually, it's free.
It is even better if you call right now.
Right. And all of our activities are free.
Yes,
which
exactly.
is, you know, something we open them up to the public, and who comes. And we've been really fortunate to have community organizations such as Prosperity Pie Shop and the Windermere Realty Trust allow us to use their spaces for the community activities. And libraries have come through for us to host bins. And we've just been so fortunate to have the community support our efforts.
How do you decide what to work on? I mean, there's so many different things you could work on. How have you chosen the projects that you're focused on right now?
I think we meet on a quarterly basis, mm-hmm. just as whoever wants to show up to a quarterly meeting. And we talk about what's important to us and what we want to do. And It kind of flows from there. Everybody brings their ideas and their thoughts and what's close to their hearts, and it works. Then we all pull together and make it happen.
And it also has to do with what's going on also in a timely fashion. For example, last January, we were saddened to know that a lot of our fellow neighbors who were working in the at PDX were furloughed and were having some difficulties. So we just said, hey, wow, we could do something about this. And so we had collections for just all kinds of products that they might use to help fill the gap until their paychecks started coming back. And it was just a wonderful opportunity for us to quickly turn something around and be able to have the community support our neighbors who were hurting at that particular time.
And again, we were flooded. I think we made daily trips to the airport to drop things off. And again, everybody thanks us. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to help other people. So it doesn't feel like an imposition.
It is really an opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah.
We also find that organizations we don't create something out of nothing on a normal basis, because there are a lot of other organizations out there doing amazing work. For example, the Giving Connection are the ones we've connected with to make these wonderful therapeutic lap pads and neck wraps for the survivors of sexual trafficking. So we amplify basically the kindness of other organizations as well when we could lend a hand in that capacity.
So sometimes you work with other organizations then? You
definitely
add volunteers to their projects.
That's correct.
It seems that being a grassroots organization is somewhat helpful for being able to be responsive to the community's needs. That if you were part of a, 501c3o, maybe you wouldn't be able to respond so immediately to what you perceive to be a need.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because we are working right now to become a 501c3. In part so that we can accept people want to donate funds to us, and we are not able to do that at this time. So that's one of the reasons, so people can deduct their donations and we can just grow and be more of an organized group.
Interesting.
It will be interesting to see how we handle growth, because right now I think one of the reasons it works so well is we're so few. What are we, seven or eight people
in the core group.
But I suspect we will grow, and that will be an interesting challenge.
And there are so many people who've been involved, even in so many different ways. When I think of the number of times I emptied the bin at Garden Home Library and how many people made incredible donations of items for the migrant children, I was totally blown away. The bin would be filled up to overflowing more than once a week, and it was so incredible. And I want to thank everybody who helped us make those collections and get those things down to the migrant children.
Could you talk a little bit about some of the other projects that you've worked on this year or that you are working on now?
Oh, we really do want to plug Amplify Kindness PDX. And it's coming up this Sunday. It's going to be held at the Middleman Jewish Community Center, and it's going to start at 1:00. And this is an opportunity for us to really take this feel-good opportunity out for all of PDX, and we're hoping that people will join us. And maybe Rona and could talk a little bit about what's going to happen at Amplify Kindness.
So at this Amplify Kindness event, we will have many opportunities to make items to give away either anonymously or not. Things like painted rocks, some will be painted already, some you can do on your own. There will be crocheted hearts, there will be felt heart pockets that people can embellish and put a note inside. There'll be bookmarks that you can make to write a little note on to attach somewhere. And all these things can be left either on a doorstep or a driveway or a desk for somebody to make somebody's day, to make them feel good about being a person in this world and to spread kindness to other people in a way that just hopefully will make them feel good and want to continue to spread it onward.
Yeah, and I might actually just give you a little background about it. This Amplify Kindness event is basically another bigger version of something that happened on a small scale. One of our main founders, Sally Cohen, had this brainstorm after there were a number of shootings last fall, back to back.
A year ago.
We were all feeling very distraught and unmoored. And one morning, a number of us woke up to go out and get our newspaper and find a rose sitting in our driveway with a message of kindness attached to it that just made us feel so connected to our community and made us stop in our tracks. It just put a smile on our face. And we felt so good about it that we all ended up saying, we want to do the same thing to our neighbors. And a number of us did. And we had one of our members who told the story of having left a rose with a message on a neighbor's doorstep. And, you know, she didn't see this neighbor too often. And he came out one morning afterwards and said, Karen, Karen, did you get a rose on your step? This just made my wife's day. She never leaves the house. And she just could not get over that someone had left her a beautiful rose with a message of kindness. We don't know what's going on with our neighbors in a lot of cases, and this connected us in a way that, you know, we might not have had. And that's what this is all about. It's about us making sure that no one slips through the cracks. And, you know, we don't know who's going to need that little message of kindness in that particular day. And so we're just giving people an opportunity to make these kind of events and then go out and just put them in spaces where others might find them and just bring a smile to their day.
I'd like to add, this is open to families, children of all ages, everybody. Again, it's free. We have two wonderful speakers coming to speak for very few minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, on kindness. One is Jan Elfers of the Ecumenical Ministries. She's a remarkable healing human, and the other is Senator Elizabeth Steiner Hayward. And we really hope everyone comes, because you'll feel really good when you leave.
It's a chance to meet people, make items of kindness, listen to good speakers. We'll have a photo booth. There will be a plarn mat, which is a plastic yarn mat. We make these for homeless people to put underneath themselves or their things, and people can work on that. And there'll be lots of opportunities to have a good time and spread some kindness around the world.
Can you tell me where it is again and the time?
It's at the Middleman Jewish Community Center. There's lots of good parking. It's off of Capitol Highway in Southwest Portland. And the time is 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. We ask that you show up at 1 o'clock. You do need to RSVP though. And we ask that the RSVPs go to positivechargepdx.org.
And this is on October 27th,
this Sunday.
This Sunday. Okay, great. Thanks so much. I'm curious. Some people say that feeling good doesn't change the world, or that kindness isn't enough. We need some more structural change. What would you say to that?
Absolutely. We need both. This is what we do. It feels really good.
And this is a start. It's a start to make people feel kind towards each other and give tokens to each other. And it's a place to start. From there, people need to build on it.
I also think it takes one person at a time. If we change one person's day, that has ripple effect. That we will never be able to understand or address or count. But it does make it, the world different. There are ripples. There are patterns. And we know that. And science knows that. And I think that when people come in and enjoy the community that they will find and build by being a part of something bigger than themselves, it shifts the world in ways that we won't be able to put into words.
We've certainly seen how hatred and cruelty and division has reverberated in the world and the effects that that has had on our world. People say that love, kindness, and compassion is more powerful than hate. Do you agree with that? Do we have any evidence that's true?
We're all still alive as a species. We may not be very long, but so far, you know.
I also think that there is science that says that, you know, the negativity bias in humans is really strong, and it had to be in order for us to survive. And so what you need to do, what science tells us, is to have, I think it's five or so positive experiences to negate a negative one. And so that means that you need to be very intentional about building positive activities into your life. And that's why we give people the opportunity to participate in an event like Amplify Kindness. It's a way of building positivity into your life to counteract what is naturally a human instinct toward negativity.
What has been the response to, by community members to some of the projects that you've been working on?
Whoosh. Overwhelming.
Overwhelmingly
wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm always surprised at how many people give so much. Just one example, in some of the backpacks that I picked up, there were these beautiful note cards written by seemingly a mom and two children is what it looked like, just saying how much they cared for the people that they were packing these backpacks for. And each backpack was packed so lovingly with a washcloth around a toothbrush and toothpaste and a little stuffed animal toy. And just looking through them, it just made my heart burst out of my chest because they were so clearly packed up with love and care for people that this family will never know. And they packed up maybe five or six of these beautiful backpacks. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine how wonderful a thing that was and how, you know, what prepossessed them to do this. But I'm so thankful that they put so much care and love into their packages.
We've also had a good feedback from families. One of the activities we've done for the past 3 years is we put together welcome boxes for foster care children, and we have the collection for it, and then we have an event where everyone gets to come and fill the boxes with all of the tools and, you know, pieces of the puzzle, so to speak, that we've collected. And families come, and they bring their kids. And so the kids get to make these welcome boxes for other children. And parents cannot thank us enough for giving their kids opportunities to learn also how to be philanthropic and how to give back and why it's important to give back and be a part of their community in giving back.
And again, everything is free or donated. And this was my first year of walking in, it was held at the Windermere Realty office, which is huge. It was so filled with items to put in these boxes for the foster kids. It was overwhelming. I actually could not even fathom how it would happen that all of this chaos would be organized at the end of 4 hours, and it all was. It's remarkable.
Just like our backpack stuffing event, which is the first large event I ever attended. There must have been 40 or 50 people that came with children to help us stuff these backpacks. And we sent how many backpacks out from that one event?
400.
Wow.
And the Windermere office was full of school supplies and self-care supplies and clothing and backpacks. And we went through in a kind of a assembly lines fashion with everybody walking around and stuffing each backpack with the things they needed and then piling them all up. And then we got them out of the room, and it was amazing how many people were involved, and they loved it. We got so much positive feedback from the people who came and attended.
Ruthie is handling our website, so I may be speaking out of turn. Do we have the video up of the children in Mexico receiving the cards and reading
but
them?
We
okay,
need to do
that will come. Check our website. We've got amazing pictures that just came in this week.
How do you decide what is needed?
Oh, I just think that, as Rona said, we have our quarterly meetings, and we all have our pulse on the community, and we've all been community activists and volunteers of other organizations in the past, and so we sort of bring it all together rather than focusing on one particular topic. That's what I think is good about this small startup, so to speak, is we see where a need is, and we try to fill it. And our smallness allows us to be flexible in that way.
So if people want to get involved in Positive Charge PDX, what can they do? And what projects do you need help with coming up?
I think the first step would be to find us on Facebook. Go to our PDX Positive Charge! PDX on Facebook and join the group and you'll see the list of things we've done in the past and things coming up. And look at our website.
Yeah, for those who aren't on Facebook like me,
exactly.
Definitely the website.
Do the website.
And Instagram, we're on Instagram.
And also, you know, I would just say if you go to the opportunities page on the website, you'll see the number one, event coming up is our Amplify Kindness this Sunday. But we also have coming up next Sunday a Plarn making event. So any crocheters out there who would like to learn how to use plastic yarn and make a sleeping mat for the homeless.
To interject, we use plastic bags.
We recycle them.
And they don't absorb water, and they keep some warmth. And so it's an incredibly utilitarian thing for homeless folks.
Keeps bags
on the sidewalk.
Keeps bags out of the landfill, and it's antibacterial, and it keeps a little bit of cushiness and warmth off the sidewalks.
Yeah. After that, then, too, a Sunday after that, we're going to be decorating placemats for the Meals on Wheels people. And, they'll be Thanksgiving-themed, and it will be just a delightful little get-together, just pulling our inner children's artists out of us. And so we have that listed on the website.
And that's because people get the meals, but they don't often get a greeting or
correct.
Anything personal
exactly.
to go with the meal.
Right. So it's sort of like getting together and having a little quilting bee where we're just doing art together.
Sounds great. Great. So,
Can I add one
yes.
more thing? Excuse me. We also, on a regular basis, deliver the extra baked goods from Safeway on Barberville Boulevard to Urban Gleaners. We also have that opportunity listed on our website. We've just opened up the 2020 calendar, so we do this once a month. We join other organizations in doing that, so we're looking for drivers for just a two-hour on a Saturday morning, the first Saturday of the month, to take on that responsibility. So it isn't a big job, but it's a very gratifying job.
And it can be just once. It doesn't have to be on a monthly basis whenever people are available.
Great. So I have been speaking to Bonnie Berg, Rona Feldman, and Ruthie Mantico-Wald from Positive Charge PDX. Thank you so much for coming to the Radio Activist today.
Thank you
for the opportunity. And can you tell me one more time if people are interested in knowing more about your organization or getting involved, where can they go?
PositiveChargePDX.org or PositiveChargePDX on Facebook.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So if you are just tuning in, this is KBOO Portland. I am Suzanne LeGrand, and this is The Radio Activist. Next up, we will be talking to Emily Lau, who is a composer, singer, and artistic director and founder of the Big Mouth Society. Stay tuned.
The arms of
of the deep below. I would lift you up from the mire and the bramble. I would turn your face to the wondrous sun. I would find a place where the gentle waters calm you and hold you till the day is done. It's a solitary journey where the tortured souls do thrive. A slippery step, you can lose your grip, you can lose your will to survive. Lose your will to survive.
Good morning, I am Suzanne LeGrand, and today on The Radioactivist, I am speaking with Emily Lau, who is a world-renowned composer, singer, and founder and artistic director of the Big Mouth Society. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, you have done so many interesting and really imaginative things with music, and I want to talk first a little bit about your work as a composer. You have a background in early music, and you have brought a lot of early music that people have never heard of to new audiences. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about why you want to do that and what you think that early music has to offer contemporary audiences.
Oh, I feel like right off the bat, we have so many threats to thread together in half an hour. It will be very interesting. Let's see. So I was a very classically trained singer. I wouldn't say just early music. So I went to, you know, conservatory and school. I was a cathedral choir girl in England. And, you know, doing the hard, difficult, competitive, repetitive work, also fun, but, you know, that's where you get good at things. And at some point in college, I was still just in, you know, opera and voice major. I was not great. I was really average. But what always attracted me was making music with other people. So I was really into the chamber music. I was really into choir, and not quite what other people were really into, which is competitive solo roles. And in that process, I found new music and I found early music. So I joined an ensemble led by one of the compositional faculty at the school that does only music that's super weird, new, and super weird, old. And as I was embarking on the journey, this is, you know, when I was 20 years old, I thought, this is so great, because there's not a book or lots of recordings telling you what is the correct way to do this. There are many ways to do this. And, you know, your job is to get educated and then be imaginative and kind of investigate what your relationship is with this music. And what also is really wonderful is I believe that really early music and really new music asks more questions for us now. For example, if you want to do music from 14th century Iberia, you first have to know what Iberia is. And then after reading for a little bit, you realize that you learn a lot about the history and politics and social structure of its time. And then you just get really sucked into this fascination. And before you know it, you know a lot of new things about the world. So I think that's a fascination of that particular period. Of course, the music is beautiful and varied and really introduced the world to me. So after that, several years later, I went to graduate school for early music. And that was fun. And I started doing the competitive gigging thing, I call it, in the Northeast. So touring with different ensembles and recording and, you know, doing different tours. And then something was bothering me. People... we were still engaged in a very similar sport, I would say, than regular competitive music. even though the content is slightly different, is still usually a authoritative man on top of an organization directing everybody of how things should go. And then when things don't go right, we don't really have a lot of say. We don't really have to be artists. So from that point on, I'm starting to ask a lot of questions and forge some new grounds. So that's the early music piece, and we'll talk more later about other things.
So how do you translate something like 14th century Iberian tunes or songs into a form that contemporary audiences can understand and also that speak to contemporary issues? Because a lot of your programming is about using music to talk about or to engage people in a reflection of what is happening at the present. How could 14th century Iberian music be relevant to us today?
Oh, so easy. So 14th century, do you know what happened in 14th century? This is when the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims all lived together. They made music together. They were neighbors. They lived in relative peace. You know, the government were fighting. The politicians are doing things. But the people, their music and their cuisine and the languages were mixed together. So if you understand the story behind the music, then suddenly there's a many more layers. So I've done a good amount of 14th century, 13th century Iberian music in the context of disobedient women. There were a group of nuns in 13th century Iberia who were actually princesses or leftover queens or the king's aunt. Yes, I love looking at your face. So exciting. And they decided that a life of privilege, but also dying in childbirth when you're really young and getting married to someone you don't love, is not for them. These are intellectuals. So they asked their daddy, can you build me a really fancy monastery or send me there so I can pursue intellectual things? And then yes, the answer is yes. And for us, what's so wonderful is now we have one of the most comprehensive collection of polyphonic music, multi-part music by women who obviously did virtuosic music, and it's in their hands. It was written in their hands.
Amazing. How is it that music, making music, creates community? Because that's also one of the things that it seems you is part of your mission. You talk about how making music inspires compassion. Can you talk about how that works?
Well, first, if you set that as a goal, that is how you achieve it. I think if you truly look into everything deeply, just like when you get to know someone deeply, you get to see the different layers, and the layers will then inform you of how to be compassionate. Let me think of how to say it in a different way. A lot of the work I do now is a combination of the different influences. So a long time ago, I was an immigrant. I moved to the U.S. when I was 17 years old. I was an undergrad in music and really confused. I was really confused because I was told before I came here from England that America is, you know, wealthy, and I know, wealthy and comfortable and beautiful and green, mm-hmm. and people are nice. And
you had a surprise or two, huh?
Yes. And I moved to Miami. So very confused. Very confused. And my mind couldn't make sense of it. And I also grew up in a more sheltered way than not, and in Hong Kong. And so I started studying also sociology in undergrad. And then I started volunteering at the local community center, and I started being the director of training for a nonprofit that works with homeless youths. And then I started getting really into, my first job was actually being a teacher at an inner city school for teen moms. And then throughout the years, I also did a lot of outreach in prison and jails, correctional centers, and worked with a lot of homeless and inner city reproductive groups, causes. And but for the longest time, I didn't see how it relates to what I do on the other side, which mm-hmm. is music. I don't see how Mozart and working with homeless people have anything to do with it, each other. And my bad, I was young. I haven't seen the connection yet. So I was doing everything kind of concurrently, you know, at different places. And then something crazy happened to me 7 years ago. Do you know this? You didn't know this. Oh, get ready for this. 7 years ago, I was on my honeymoon trip, and I was on the Costa Concordia. Have you heard of that? Costa Concordia is the cruise ship that sank off the Mediterranean Sea. And I was on that ship. So right before that, I just founded the Broken Consort not very long ago, which is my professional touring ensemble. My career was going well in Boston. You know, I was really anxious all the time because that's sort of the environment you're in, but also on the road to doing the kind of work that I thought I wanted to do. So long story short, I have to make this a short story. I saw people dying in front of my eyes. I saw lots of crazy things. And
so you were on this ship as it was sinking?
Yes.
Oh my God.
There are lots of information on the internet if you Google it. So anyway, so that brought about we didn't die, obviously, but we saw a lot of things. It changed my outlook quite a bit. I remember as we were scrambling on the deck, we could have died. I said to myself, if I could get out of here alive, I'm not going to be so afraid anymore. I'm going to have my life be governed by love, not by fear. I know it sounds so common. People say that all the time, but that was a real pledge. And so on the other side of that was PTSD. Never had that before. I never saw a psychologist or seen a shrink before that moment, but I was not well. I couldn't get out of bed. I could not show up to work. And I remember the therapist said to me, you need to go to work. You need to pretend as if you liked it. So I would write in my sheet music, pretend as if you like it. Smile. I put in cues in performances, and I was still touring everywhere. So that lasted, you know, quite a while. And in the middle of the therapy, maybe 5-6 months in, I was doing therapy every week, still really unwell. The therapist said, you know, you're very lucky because you are an artist. That didn't even occur to me. you're an artist and you can make meaning out of this because you're not going to find justice out of this. There's no justice in this. So see if you can do something. So I went home and thought about it for a long time, and I decided I want to write music about this experience. Mind you that prior to that, I was not a composer.
Oh, interesting. So this is what started composing for you.
Yep, because I didn't see how, like I said, other people's composition would have anything to do with this experience. And I have so much to say, so much pain and processing and, yeah, so many things I want to say. So I made a pledge, made a promise with my husband that he will finish a book. He's going to write a memoir. And he's similar. He was trained as a playwright but did not write anything substantial since he finished his training and finally has something meaningful. And I said, I will write an album. And of course, there were record companies that were interested, you know, of course, because that seemed like it would be lucrative. And I, for the first time in my life then, I actually said no to the large establishments. I said no to institutions because I wanted to see what would happen if I just do whatever it is that I want. Never had that before. And so I did. So in the 1 year anniversary of the accident, I released a full length album. It was my first one. And he released a book. And that led to many other things. And that was actually really healing, because instead of sitting around feeling very much like, I didn't feel like a victim. I definitely just feel really low and disappointed at humanity. And I decided to do something about it. And I think the process healed me. And going forward from that point, my music and my activism and my decision to bring this process to more people has really cemented and intensified.
So It's so writing an album, very ambitious, helped you to make some meaning of this situation. How is it that making music with other people helps them to maybe not be as disappointed with humans, or as you said once, when in doubt, make music? Why? What does music do that people need and people need to do together?
So on a really superficial or simple low level, whenever you're making music, you're not in the other space, which is doing other things. So there were times when I was so sad that the only time I wasn't crying was when I was making music. So that's number one. Number two, now you're responsible for something bigger than yourself, but the outcome is something beautiful. You know, it's not practical. Music is so completely impractical. We spend hours and hours, hundreds of hours of time for that 1 second or 5 seconds, right, of transcendence that we might be able to achieve if we got lucky. And being able to work towards something in a way so frivolous, I believe, really cement your bond. And if the culture in that community of making music is not an authoritative one, but a loving one, it really asks you to get to know people really well, mm-hmm. you know? And a really good chamber ensemble are always like this. A really good chamber ensemble, everybody knows everybody's strengths, but we also know your worst qualities. And it's our job to help each other cover it up and not bring it out, or slowly develop them, slowly overcome them over time. And so it's a really slow, really immersive process of getting to know people. And it's not for everyone. And I think in the reality of contemporary society, we don't really have much of that space. How do you ask for excellence, but have time and kindness in the process? And yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about the founding of the Big Mouth Society, starting with the name?
Oh, that's a long story too. But I'll try to make it easy. So you see, there's this social activism. There is all of my professional activities nationally. There is all of these ensembles in Portland that other people have started and that asked me to help them develop. And this salon series that I've developed myself, all of these kind of things were floating around in several piles when I moved to Portland five and a half years ago. And it was fine with me until I did a show 3 years ago where I performed naked, talking about the feminine body and what it means to have a feminine body and overcoming, you know, certain limitations of that. I did the show with two other ladies, artists from around the country. But anyway, after that show, I have somehow attracted a group of really dedicated, middle-aged, really awesome women. And they wanted to help. They wanted to make this bigger. So one of them became a student and a friend and said, "Emily, I am quite sick and tired of watching you run a nonprofit out of your own pocket, because I also am not really money-minded in that way. I just want to do things. And in order to do a lot of things, you have to sometimes sideline the money part and just go, it will take care of itself. And I truly believe in that." And so at some point she said, I can help you turn this entire thing into a nonprofit. But I said, I don't want this to be about me. So let's get a bunch of people in the community and different area of this to get together in a room and talk. So we talked for around two, three months about what it is that we want to do. The first iteration of Big Mouth was an artist collective, not just with musicians, but also with photographers, with fine art. Yes, that's the very first one. And the one thing that's really important to me is anything that I'm involved in, I like to let it organically change. you know, sometimes a thing needs time to become what they need to become. And so 2 years in, we realized that we really are a music organization. The other things we do were fine, but they're not as great because there are other people who are as inspired as I am as a musician to lead those organizations that focus on those things. And we just don't have as many in-house inspirations. So the word Big Mouth is, we were talking about names for a long time, just lots of ideas. And so you know that Big Mouth is basically a CSA. Everybody pays within the community, right? And so it's a community-supported organization. It's not a grant-supported. It's not rich people-supported. It's all the people making the music and going to the concert pays into this pot.
So it's kind of an artist collective, then.
It totally is an artist collective, you know, but it is not seen in music. It's common in photography. It's common in dance, in a way. But I don't believe that it has been in music in a cross-spectrum way. That means from amateurs to professional, you're all under one roof and producing a series that mix these performances together. You know, usually when you go to a concert series, they're either just a community choir or only professionals, but you don't see them interacting on a daily basis. And for that, we're really proud. So the word Big Mouth was, as I was growing up, I was seen as being really unattractive in Hong Kong. And my relatives and schoolmates are always saying, like, oh, your mouth is so big and your forehead's so big. If your mouth weren't so big, then you would be pretty. And, well, miraculously, it's seen as attractive in the United States. So I guess it's fine now. But I thought I brought it up. I said, oh, I like the word big mouth because a big mouth can say things.
That's right. You know, there's a sense of people have a big mouth. Speak the truth, right?
Yeah. So, and laugh harder and eat more.
Yeah. So could you talk a little bit about the concert that you have coming up with the Big Mouth Society?
Yes. So this is our third Cold Songs, Warm Songs concert, which happens during the holiday seasons. And everybody likes to go to warm, sweet, you know, choir concert around that November time. And so personally, my favorite growing up is a thing called Lessons and Carols, which is an Anglican tradition. So you go to church, then you sit down, and then they do different readings interspersed with really wonderful carols, and then some congregational singing. I like the format, and I don't like the religion anymore. And so I keep thinking, how do we keep a lot of these rituals that people need and love and turn it into something that works for us? So there we have in November a show where you're going to hear readings from in eight different languages talking about change and love and death and coming alive, you know, many different topics in different languages, including Danish, Turkish, Chinese. So you get the picture. And the music itself is from all around the world about these topics. We have music from Taiwan, we have music from Brazil, with music from Venezuela, with music from the US, Italy. So again, you get the picture. So you're treated to a really rich experience of many different things. And the idea is, I hope people would come, and when they walk out of there, they feel accepted and uplifted. And that's sort of the idea of the show. And we have artists from all around the world. And we've been working on this for, you know, 3 solid months now.
If people want to find out more about the show and also about your work, where can they go?
They can go to www.big-mouth.org for Big Mouth. So we're always, always looking for more interesting musicians who are really passionate and dedicated to the idea of, for example, kindness, equality, discovering new things and working really hard toward them. And we are also looking for audience members who would feel intrigued and moved by these products and these projects that we do. So again, www.big-mouth.org. And one thing about us in terms of activism is all of our shows are offered to the public at a pay-as-you-can scale. So no one is turned away for lack of fund, and you don't have to justify yourself. So do come and be kind if you can. And we always say, hey, give 1 hour of your salary. If you make lots of money, that's wonderful. Give to the arts. If you don't make money, come anyway and be moved. And as for my own artistic activities, you can go to emily-lau.com. I just released an album 5 days ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I have been talking today to Emily Lau, who is a composer, singer, social activist, and artistic director and founder of the Big Mouth Society here in Portland. And so thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
This is Suzanne LeGrand, and this is The Radio Activist on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center in Portland. The Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium will feature artist talks and presentations by Native artists, a panel discussion, a community meal, an artist marketplace, and more. Again, that's the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center, 710 Southwest Jackson Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Get Kids Outdoors Dinner on Friday, October 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. at EcoTrust in Portland. The Get Kids Outdoors Dinner supports Betty's 360 and Urban Nature Partners, two youth mentoring organizations that look to create more equitable access to the outdoors for historically marginalized communities in Portland. There will be dinner, drinks, silent auctions, raffles, and the opportunity to learn more about both organizations. Again, that's the Get Kids Outdoors Dinner on Friday, October 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Billy Frank Jr. Conference Center at EcoTrust, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is now 10 o'clock. Up next is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein.
From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, the anti-government, anti-austerity protests continue in Chile. We'll have reports from on the ground in Chile and in San Francisco, where the Chilean community has taken to the streets in support of their brothers and sisters in Chile. And we'll rebroadcast our moving interview with five-time Emmy Award-winning filmmaker John Carlos Frey on the expanding violent impact that U.S. border policy is having on tens of thousands of people fleeing violence in Central America. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this coming straight at you. Stay tuned.